I don't know this talk, it's the word the automatic construction of semantically rich ontologies. I don't tell you how long it's going to take until we get there, 50 years or hopefully less. So let me just explain what LIMBA is. LIMBA is a spin-off from Language Computer Corporation. Many of you probably have heard about LCC or Language Computer Corporation. That company is active and doing very well and developing all sorts of R&D NLP modules as part of our R&D efforts. This is an attempt to commercialize that technology. So we decided to have a company that will focus on commercializing those NLP modules that we have built over the last 12 years or so. So this is, this talk is more optimistic in tone than Bill's talk, which was rather pessimistic in my view, because there are many things that have happened in the area of NLP. I hope that the PhD students do not get discouraged because they are working on some tough NLP problems, and there are still jobs. Maybe it's not at Microsoft, in some other place. So I want to talk about the construction of semantically rich ontologies. And I'll convince you that someday it will be possible to build these knowledge bases automatically. Let me start with some definitions. It's rather important to know the difference between knowledge base and ontologies and knowledge classification. So I imagine there are some students here. Information and data is basically a collection of facts from which some conclusions can be drawn. For example, the temperature outside, the facts that you read in newspapers, and so on. Knowledge is the processing of information and through the process of reasoning. Knowledge discovery from text is the process that extracts structured knowledge from text, which is unstructured information, right? So that's knowledge acquisition, or sometimes it's called text mining. All these terms are more or less equivalent. An ontology is a way to put some structure into some concepts that belong to one domain. Mostly they are organized via ESA relationship. You have here the definition by Danny. The knowledge base is the ontology together with a set of instances of classes that belong to that ontology, right? That's the definition from Wikipedia. And the knowledge classification is the reasoning process that organizes these concepts and relations into some hierarchical structure, which was proposed by the Greek philosophers, actually, and is still used today. It's very useful to organize knowledge somehow, because you can do better reasoning if the knowledge is organized. The outline of what I want to say today, first I want to motivate very briefly the need for developing ontologies, then a couple types of knowledge, a basic approach for knowledge acquisition from text, the knowledge representation of text. I've spent quite a bit of time on that, and this is the quite different view from Bill and some others. I believe that it's possible to extract knowledge from text to a certain degree of precision. I think this is the issue, that you can always come up with examples that don't work, but there are many other examples that that work. And if works 70% of the time, maybe it's good. Maybe it's not good for a commercial product, but in some applications, that will do the job. So a lot of progress has been made. I want to mention how to extract semantic relations, and we use semantic calculus to combine these relations to make sense out of a larger portion of text. Then extended worded knowledge base. This is a modification of the extended word that has been developed at UT Dallas. An example of a knowledge acquisition from text system called Jaguar, that was built at Limba, Sarta, LCC, and some information about how to merge different knowledge bases and how to evaluate using some matrix the development of these knowledge bases that are automatic. So ontologies are, this is very brief, and this is just a few points that give a sense of why we should pay attention to this. Ontologies, I expect, to play a major role in the semantic web, and you read that in many magazines and articles. The problem is that some of these ontologies, most of the time, are developed by hand, and there are very few tools that try to build these ontologies automatically. So that's the point of my talk, that I want to automate the construction of these ontologies. Ontologies have been used in advanced NLP applications, namely question answering. We use them, other people use them. In text summarization, there are some, I have written somewhere some notes who use ontologies in different applications. So this is a fact that they have been used in these advanced NLP applications. And ontologies are used for reasoning. They have been used in textual entailment, for example, the RTE computation that Bill has mentioned. And if you have to deal with acronyms, you clearly need some ontologies. Last week, I participated in a meeting. It was a meeting where a number of military people have presented their work, and 80% of what they said was an acronym. I lost them. I could not make sense because they use so many acronyms. So you really need an ontology to classify those acronyms and where they belong in the hierarchical structure of knowledge. So these are just some examples that I think make the point that indeed it's useful to build ontologies automatically. If you have questions, please interrupt me. I would like to respond, and maybe it would be more interesting. Few words about our focus. We want to, therefore, to extract knowledge from text, and we have a multi-layer approach. A lot of what I say here relates to the work done at Limba and at LCC. So this is our, my personal view of how we attack the problem. We want to talk about knowledge representation and storage. There is a difference between contextual and universal knowledge, and that creates a problem in building these ontologies. And then you have to maintain the ontologies by doing a conflict resolution. You have to merge ontologies, and then you have to query them and to do some reasoning. Yes?
So you may be getting to this later, but how do you draw the distinction between contextual and universal knowledge?
It's coming up in a slide or so. Maybe two slides. So what we need are tools for representing and organizing the information extracted from text. In this attempt, we want to transform WordNet into a very large general purpose knowledge base, which is the upper ontology, right? So take the WordNet, everybody, many people know what WordNet is, and we really want to transform that database into something that can be used as an ontology. We want to federate different knowledge bases to combine them. We want to have enhanced methods for concept classification and to map. We want to extract concepts from nominal and verbal concepts. People just extract concepts and relations from phrases like predicate structures. We also extract relations from compound nominals. We want to make the difference between the classes and instances. For example, the class of airplanes, that's a concept, and a particular airplane or a flight will be an instance of that particular concept. I want to distinguish between the common sense versus domain knowledge. So these are some of the things that we need to have, and I just put them there. Again, this is somehow repeating that we want to extract this from text, but not only from text, from some other sources, for example, extended WordNet. And it is this issue of knowledge interoperability. I don't know if you know, there was an effort, part of DTO, called ICRIS, not what it stands for, but basically it was an attempt to standardize the knowledge representation. And a language came out of that effort, IKL, Interoperability Knowledge Language. And people have tried to use that, and I think some papers are have been written about that. Okay, this is an algorithm or a recipe how we want to build these ontologies automatically. First we start, suppose you have a domain in which you want to develop an ontology. You start with some seed words, and these seed words can be selected either manually or automatically. If you know something about that domain, you talk to an expert and they tell you what the important concepts in that domain would be. And those are the seed words. Okay. Next, you want to search over a set of documents for the occurrence of those seed words. So you find sentences that contain the seed words. Right? That's pretty simple up to here. Then you parse those sentences. The idea is that around the seed words there are some relations and some other concepts that relate to the seed words. And those should be captured in the ontology. So you parse those sentences and then you extract semantic relations. Then you extract semantic relations via semantic parsing. This is a big step, how to build a semantic parser. But some people have done that. Then you want to integrate the semantic relations that you target. And this is not only ESA, part, whole, causation, some other semantic relations. You target certain semantic relations and you extract them and you link them to the seed words, and there are other concepts that are related to the seed words via those semantic relations. So all of a sudden, you are growing slowly the ontology, but you are growing in a very organized manner. And then you reiterate, and the next iteration, you take not only the seed words, but the concepts that relate to the seed words, and that's how the ontology grows and grows and grows. Now, there is need to make sure that you do not put into ontology some trivial concepts. So we have to check the granularity. So basically these are the steps that have to take place. And as you can imagine, there is a lot of NLP processing that takes place in the process. Now we turn our attention to the universal versus contextual knowledge. Universal knowledge is capturing concepts that are related by some ESA relations, and they are always true. Like, for example, what it is in WordNet, it's always true. Here you have a sentence, chemical weapons such as nerve gas. Nerve gas is a chemical weapon because of the word such. So nerve gas is a concept that is subsumed by chemical weapons. And that is universal knowledge. It's always true. It's true today, tomorrow, and in many contexts. The contextual knowledge will be the knowledge that comes from some sentences that have to deal with certain contexts. For example, the forces launch a full-scale attack on Monday. And here you have an event, launch, and this sentence is true within certain contexts. May not be true today. It was true when it was written. Was true about a certain situation. So this is what I call contextual knowledge. And you have to distinguish between this universal and contextual knowledge. And here, you see the event, and then extract relations like forces will be the agent for the launch, and the full-scale attack is the theme of the launch, and this launch has happened on Monday, the temporal information. So in the knowledge base, the one with the green, you have the concept that I extracted. Then you have some ESA relation for right now, but there will be some other relation as well. And when you start to classify these concepts one against the other, you build a hierarchy. And then on this side, you have the contextual knowledge that is true only in some situations. And you try to store this knowledge as events, basically, and the relations between these events and other concepts via some relations that we want to extract. Now, like I said, we are also using some other semantic relations, not only ESA, for example, part-whole relations, and causation and some other relations. Okay. So our goal, therefore, will be to extract knowledge from text. And we have thought hard about how to structure this knowledge that we want to extract from text. And we have this multi-layer approach. You see here some knowledge that is explicit, and then there is also implicit knowledge that also could be extracted from text. For this explicit knowledge, you start with the surface text, and then from there you can construct syntactic trees, right? And this would be the first level, and the same information at the lexical level. And then on top of that, you can extract semantic relations between those concepts. On top of that, there will be context. And this, I'll have a taxonomy of the context, will be temporal context. Certain events happen within certain period of time, will be spatial context, will be opinions. And you have to know what is the context in which this information is true. On top of that will be events and properties of events, the relations and the meta events. So the use of this hierarchical approach is that there's a lot of information here, fewer information as you go up the hierarchy, and you like to reason at the high level of this hierarchy. And then whenever necessary, you're looking for more details, you go back and you go to the surface level or to the lexical level, and you have all the information that the text is offering capture at this level, in case you need. In case you can reason at the higher level, then that will be easier, instead of dealing with all the details of the text. So let's see how we can do that. Some of the innovations that we had, I think, at LIMBA is to have a rich representation of text semantics. We extract concepts and semantic relations from concepts, extract some event properties, we handle text phenomena such as negation. That's a very difficult problem, actually, and also modality. We mark implicit knowledge and capture the meaning suggested by it. So implicit knowledge is rather difficult to capture. And people are doing that, reading between lines, so with such ease, but machines have difficulty to figure out the implications, the implications that are proposed by the text. So the fourth layer representation is starting from bottom up, will be the syntax representation, the semantics, the context, and events. Okay. Here's a concrete example. Suppose you have the sentence, Dilda Flores kidnapping occurred on January 13, 1990, and the next sentence will be a week before he had fired the kidnappers. So the first layer is the syntactic structure plus that syntactic structure is transformed into some logic form. And this is the logic form that we use. It's based on the Dickinsonian logic. So you see here, Gilda Flores is a proper noun and is, has been tagged by a name entity. Recognizer as a human, and that has argument x1, and De La Forest kidnapping, there is a possessive relation X1 and X2. Kidnapping has the argument X2, and occur is the verb, but this is an event, and this is the actor of the event, and this is the object. So there is no subject and an object for occur, except that the kidnapping has occurred. So this is the actor. Then a preposition links that event with X4, and X4 is basically the date. And we represent the date as a function that is represented as a sixth tuple, the year, the month, the day, the hour, the minute, and the second. So January 13, 1990 is represented as 1990, January and 13, and then starts from midnight until 1 second before next midnight.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
So you identified Gilda Flores as a human. Now, have you used the fact that she was kidnapped to do that? Or
I think it's a he, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay. So I've already. But have you used the fact that this person was kidnapped to identify them as human, or just the shape of the name? Because let's say Louis Vuitton, you know, or some meaning.
This is identified as a proper name, and the name entity recognizer has no trouble identifying this as a name.
But what about Louis Vuitton, you know, or some, you know, other maker of handbags who just use, you know, designer whose name is used? How do you tell that that's a designer and not a human? I mean, I would think that being kidnapped would be a clue that this was a person.
Well, the name entity recognizer takes that into account.
It does.
It does. Yes. That's.
So
that's,
how does it do something that complicated as knowing that humans are kidnapped?
Well, this is part of the progress that has been made in NLP in the last couple of years. It's possible with probably 90-some% accuracy to identify names, organizations, locations, a number of entities.
It's based on training data. The name entity recognition is usually done in a supervised way. So if you see lots of examples of humans being kidnapped, then you would know that the next time you see a name in the context of kidnapping, it's going to be a human.
So it
doesn't exactly know that humans are kidnapped, but the model associates.
It uses statistics in n-grams and so on.
Probably the case that the possessive is even more informative, because you usually use possessive with animate entities, and that would probably be more common for learning.
Could be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think that's an easy problem here. Let's move on to the semantic relations. There is a theme semantic relation between X1 and X2 that the theme of the kidnapping is Gilda Flores. And the agent of event one is the kidnapping, yes. And then there is a temporal relation that X4, the date, is the date on which this event has occurred. Then on top of that, we extract the fact that event E1 took place during this date, which is identified as January 30, 1990. So that's a relation that, another semantic relation that is derived from here. Then we also identify that there is an event, E2, and let's see, the event E2, so here, kidnapping is the event. Okay, so we say that X2 is the event E2. That's just a notation. And there's no other event here. Kidnapping is the only event. Now here, in this sentence, you do the same thing, and there is two events, the firing and just the firing, okay? So you have another event here, E, four, I think is that is firing. Now you want to link these two events, the kidnapping and the firing. And there is a causal relation that is established by the semantic parser that links the event from this sentence to the event from this sentence, and then you say that the firing has been caused by the kidnapping. And it's just the opposite. The kidnapping has been caused by firing. And so if you understand that, then you can figure out that actually this was because it's nothing but the revenge, because has been a firing, and then that caused the kidnapping, and the motive was a revenge. So that's the kind of information you want to abstract at a very high level. So you see here different levels in action and up to the meta relation at the very top. So if you have this understanding, we'll be able to reason.
It's still confusing to me how you actually can do this. For example, I mean, kidnapping, I would naively assume is an action that has two agents involved. There's the person, or there's an agent who's the kidnapper, and there's an object who's the person who's kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And now in the first sentence, this agent, the person who actually does the kidnapping, or group of them, doesn't appear.
Exactly.
And so then
it's a dummy variable for this event, the doer of the event is not specified. It's only the object, the kidnapper, was the one who was kidnapped.
And so then you can identify that on the other side.
Well, that's the problem of the semantic parser. They indicate that there's a causation event, a causation relation between this event and this event. And that's what's trying to be established there.
Then when you come to revenge, I mean, I would sort of myself probably assign a probability to that, but not a certainty. Maybe they kidnap.
Well, to go from a cause relation to a revenge, you got to have a rule. That's clear, it's not specified here. The fact that if one event causes another one, and one event is ill in nature, then it was a revenge. Like somebody was killed, or something bad happened to a person, then it was because of a revenge. And then that can be done with some rules.
No, I understand, but for example, just to play the devil's advocate,
yeah.
Maybe these kidnappers, they've been fired, they don't have any money, and you know, at least in Hollywood, you know, they might say, hey, you know, the way we'll get some money is we'll kidnap this person and, you know, then use the ransom to go to Brazil.
It's a commercial transaction.
That's right.
Well, in this entailment task that we have participated in, you have to establish the connection and the decision if it's an entailment or not based on the most likely outcome. The same thing here. There are situations in which that may not be true, but most likely it's going to be a revenge.
So is there probability built into your system?
You could be. We do not have that yet.
But is it
one
built
could.
Into the, wait, I mean, not in the answer maybe, but built into the way the conclusion.
Right, there's possibility to put numbers for all these semantic relations, for example. Here there's no need, because that comes from a parser. Once you decide that that's the correct parse, then,
But I'm just asking, in your thing, everything is zero or one. It's either true or it's
yes,
not true.
But it's possible to put probabilities.
And you don't use, I mean, for example, Bayesian reasoning to
no.
conclude revenge is a like list. Okay.
No. Just rules. Okay, so that's what we mean by hierarchical representation of text. Now, this goes into more details, and you see here the logic form for that sentence, which is represented here. And on top of this, we want to extract semantic relations with the goal here, right, which are this semantic relation between X3 and E2, and the polar relation, right? And then you want to bring more information to say that the whole event has occurred during the other event, X3. There is a relation between E1, which is attention here, somehow this is labeled with E1, and there is a relation with marked with red, which is higher, at higher level. Okay, so I think you got an idea of what you mean by semantic, by hierarchical representation. This is another example where we use this hierarchical representation for textual entailment. You have a text that is hypothesis and also the actual text in which you want to test that hypothesis. H is hypothesis and T is the text. And the first thing we do it in the reverse order. We detect the context. And the context could be detected by some keywords. Then we apply the semantic parser, which, by the way, does not need the syntactic parser. You can extract semantic relations before actually doing the syntactic parsing of the text. And then you do the logic form. And at the end, you have the text in the logic form, the hypothesis in the logic form, and through the process of reasoning, you try to see if the hypothesis is following from the text. So this has been implemented in a system with which we have participated in RT. So missing from here is the event layer, which is not part of this system. Now here's a list of the semantic relations that we are using, and we have developed this set over a number of years. There are 40 semantic relations, and this list is longer than some other list that is using ProBank and some other. We just go over a couple. There's a possession relation, kingship relation, the property attribute holder, agent, temporal, depiction, part whole, hyponymy, the user relation, entail cause, may produce instrument, location, purpose, and others. You see them here. So it's a fairly rich set of semantic relations, and we have trained the semantic parser to identify these semantic relations between concepts in text. And we do that on predicate structures like verb and other concepts, and also within the compound nominals. For example, if you say doorknob, there is a part correlation between the knob and the door. Okay. Now let's focus for a moment on concept, on contexts. There are a number of contexts that can occur in text. One will be an objective context if there is a description of the real world, and also could be a subjective context when there is a description of the real world but through somebody's beliefs, like an author's opinion, or maybe it could be a fiction. If you say, I believe that UCLA is a good university, that's Dan Moldovan's belief, but maybe somebody from USC will argue otherwise. Probability, I was a professor at USC before I moved to that. Probability, possibility, uncertainty, this describes possible situations. There are many sentences that fall into this category. Time and space context. Right? This meeting here is right now within a certain time frame, and later on will be a different kind of meeting. Planning context. If you say things like a train is on schedule, that means that event is planned, and you should assume that will happen unless stated otherwise. So it's very important to distinguish between different contexts and to be able to reason. In NLP, people have not paid much attention to this context. And McCarthy has spent a great deal of time, John McCarthy, trying to formalize this context. However, his work is slightly different, but certainly can be used as mathematical foundation for dealing with context. Very interesting topic. So here's an example of a context that is the planning context. For example, it was an Acela Express number 1776 schedule to depart 30 minutes later on its return trip to the Big Apple. The logic form up to schedule, up to the word schedule, and then when you see the word schedule, that triggers a planning context, and then whatever follows after that should be bracketed as planning context. That it could be true or may not be true. If somehow there is information later on that for some reason the train did not depart the schedule, then this whole context falls apart. If there is no such information, then it's soon to be true. So it's the issue of bracketing some information as contextual information. Then the second step here is to extract semantic relations, then the actual context. That, and there is this rule that the planning context is true on schedule indicates the planning context. So we kind of have rules like this that indicate the present of the context. If you don't have this information, that what is contextual information, what is pure information or universal, then you cannot build good ontologies.
So how does it learn the context? What
through some keywords, like for example the word schedule, or you can say in somebody's opinion, or it's possible that something happened, right? So there are some key phrases, and again this system could be trained to detect those keywords. The problem is to put brackets to figure out where the context starts and where the context ends. Does it end in that sentence? Does it end in the next sentence? Right? And then when you do reasoning, you have to pay attention to those contexts. Otherwise, you get wrong conclusions.
But you can't learn a context unless you've been given the keywords that describe it.
Yeah.
So if there are other keywords you didn't know about, you just wouldn't.
Again, statistically, that can be detected. To detect the presence of a context is less of a problem than putting the brackets around the context. Now, in order to do all these things, you need resources. So I want to spend a few minutes to tell you about the resources that we developed from WordNet. Some of you know about this. This is the WordNet. It was done at Princeton, George Miller and Christiane Felbon, and it's available for free. This is the extended WordNet that was developed at UT Dallas. Sandra and I were principal investigator for that. So what we did, we took WordNet and we have disambiguated all the words, the content words, in the glosses, because each syntax has its own gloss. So that was the first thing we done. Then we parsed the glosses and we have produced some logic forms for the glosses from this parse tree. So that was done at UTD, and it's available. This extended WordNet is available. If you go to UT Dallas and search for extended WordNet, you'll get it. Now, other company at LCC and now at Limba, we are building knowledge bases out of this extended WordNet. So we have done an extra step, that is to extract semantic relations from the glosses of the synsets. And if you do that, then the whole WordNet or extended WordNet becomes a knowledge base. And you have a very large knowledge base. WordNet has about 120,000 concepts, nouns, about 80,000 verbs and adjectives and adverbs, right? And not only that, those concepts are linked through some relations, but the concepts and the glosses of those synsets are also linked via some relations. And this has been done by machine to detect the Western ambiguity, but has been checked by humans. So the information there is correct. So it's the semantic relations. We check to see if the semantic relations are the proper semantic relations. So we have something that has been verified, and it's of gold standard. And now we are building what's called EventNet. And this EventNet extracts all the concepts from WordNet data events. Because in WordNet, there are concepts that are events and are not events. For example, a table is not an event, but a meeting is an event. So we extracted those events, and then we link the events via some other probabilistic links with some other possible events. So now you can predict what events may happen in the future if you have a certain event taking place right now. So what will happen after a meeting? Well, after a meeting, people will go have a coffee break, or you go have lunch, right? So there are other events that are linked to a particular event through some probabilistic relations, semantic relations, and those relations are learned from other sources other than word. So that's what's called event. Very good for reasoning. A little bit more information about the extended word knowledge base. The semantically rich upper ontology based on WordNet utilizes information from glosses. And you can do things like this, that the terrorist group, this fancies money. And this is coming from the definition of the terrorist group. The gloss for this concept indicates that. And you can use this as an axiom that could be used later on for reasoning. Okay, so features axiom have been propagated from the lower concepts to the upper concepts to be generalized. Let me give you an example. I'll skip this. Okay, so so if you have the concept terrorist group, through those connections that can be established between the concepts in the gloss, you can find out that terrorist group can use terror, opposes peace, dispenses money, and some other activities. So you can ask the question, what does a terrorist group do? Okay, according with the information from WordNet, you automatically get all these concepts that are related to what terrorist group can do. Okay, so that's very powerful. Or you can ask the question about the bank. Now this is disambiguated, so we are talking about the institution bank, not the Bank of a River. So what can a bank do? Can issue currency, prepare statements, provide credit, and some other things. All this information is in WordNet, but you have to have the WordNet convert into knowledge base, and then you find statements like that.
So presumably banks can dispense money as well, but in a somewhat different way than terrorists
used to. I'm only...
not much different.
It's possible, it's possible, but like I said, WordNet is not complete. And I'm only extracting the information that is stated in WordNet definitions. And the point is that it's plenty there. Sorry?
When you say there's plenty there, so obviously this is not intended to be a complete list. What do you do when it's incomplete? I mean, for example,
look at the glass. It's half full, right? So I have something here that I didn't have before. I have some axioms that I can use, right?
Yes.
The fact that is half empty, right? This could be supplemented with other information, or you can figure out that a bank is an organization, a terrorist group is an organization, and somehow I don't know for what reason they can dispense money and the bank cannot do. There is no disinformation in WordNet. So probably we like to add more information into WordNet from what we have right now.
From these examples, what seems to be kind of obvious is there any way of knowing that the bank will not end up being considered a terrorist organization because it has some commonalities with the terrorist group, right? It's dispensing the money.
There is no connection between the terrorist group and bank. unless they are organizations. So, but then in a hierarchy, tourism group does certain things and the banks do other things. No, there's, that information is not there. So here's the definition of the terrorism as it appears in that gloss for the concept terrorism: calculated use of violence against civilians in order to attain goals that are political or religious or ideological in nature. Now from this extracted semantic relations like terrorism is a calculated use, is right there. Then the property of the use is that it's calculated. The theme of the use is violence. The direction of violence is against civilians. The I forgot about this PRP use. I think it's
purpose.
Purpose. Yes, that's what it is. Yeah. The purpose of the of violence in order to attain. So the purpose of violence is to attain. And then attain is linked to other things. You see, attain is linked to goals. So the semantic parser establishes semantic relations between the concepts that are identified in the gloss. And this is another property of the gloss. These kind of semantic relations are extracted by the parser. They are there. And we store them in some templates like this. The terrorism is a concept that is a use, so it links to another concept use. It's not very useful. That's the problem. Some of these connections are not very useful, but they are there, and you have to deal with them, and probably could be ignored. But then there are others that are very useful. For example, the information about violence, the information about the goal, attaining, and so on. So you store them like this. Another example is about tennis. I really like this example. It's rich of semantic relations. A game played with rackets by two or four players who hit the ball back and forth over a net that divides the court. All these semantic relations are discovered. And then you store them as templates. These are the main events: divide, hit, play, and concept players and tennis. Now, what we do is we use this information for lexical chains. Bill had said before that a big problem is the link two different patterns. And it's true that linking different lexical syntactic patterns to see that they have the same meaning is very difficult. We do that via lexical chains, okay, between concepts. So using the information from extended word and knowledge base, you find out if there is a semantic connection between one concept and another concept. This is a very, very powerful idea, and some other people have done work in establishing lexical chains. We have a software that text, these lexical chains. In fact, you can get many lexical chains, and the trick is to put some weights to figure out which lexical chain is the most likely. The shorter the chain, the better. Now, once you have these lexical chains, then you can generate some axioms. So if you have the question, what can a player do? The player is one concept in WordNet, and you find out everything what a player does. And you can look at all the concepts that are related to prayer via actions, action verbs. So a player can play tennis, can play squash, can play volleyball, etc., etc. Okay, there is, let me see how I'm doing with time. Well, I don't have much time, so these are some more examples of losses. Let us say a few words about the semantic calculus. These are this is our way of combining semantic relations, the form relation between the end concepts. So if you have a sentence like John is swimming in the north part of the river, John is swimming in the river, and is swimming in the north part of that river. So X1 is a location L1, and L1 is part of location L2. So the north part is part of the river. He is swimming in the river. John met Bob in Dallas. This indicates that John is in Dallas. So the location and the physical interaction, which is meeting, implies that X2 is also at location L1. Okay, so we can combine some semantic relations to give a broader semantic relation between the end concept. Here's more examples. X causes Y, Y causes Z, X causes Z. Now, is it always true? Well, some of these semantic calculus relations are always holding. Some of them are holding only under certain conditions. And I had a student who did a PhD thesis on semantic calculus. So there's a thesis that was done about 2 years ago at UTD dealing with this very topic, if you're interested. For example, there is this situation that one relation dominates the whole chain. Influence followed by cause is dominated and by influence. So it's the results of influence. Either in purpose is dominated by purpose. Or is I part whole, is dominated by part whole.
Are these manually derived relations?
These are, yes, through observation, yes. Yes. Another example, these are some concepts, noun concepts. Noun concept one, autonomy relation, noun concept two. Two is ISA of three. One is ISA of four. There's autonomy between three and four. But there's no connection between 1 and 4. And because of this relation and ISA, there is an autonomy relation between 1 and 3. The same thing between 4 and 5. There is autonomy and then ISA, and there is an ISA relation there. Now, in a few minutes, I want to get to the Jaguar system, which is the knowledge acquisition from text that has been done at LCC and now at Limba. Basically, it uses all these tools that I mentioned, NLP tools, and it builds the ontology. So you start with some set of documents, and you may have or may not have seeds, and Jaguar uses those tools to build the knowledge base, which eventually can be visualized, edited, and you can do reasoning. The first step, you have to do some document pre-processing because you want to extract knowledge from text. So there is rich information in many, many types of documents. And you have to bring those documents to some format which is understood could be input to the system. So we deal with doc files, HTML, PDF, RTF, and others. And there are converters from those formats into the plain text. We also have to deal with tables and abbreviations and glossary terms, headliners. Right? There is a lot to do in pre-processing the documents to bring it to the form that's understood by the system. Then there are a series of NLP modules, tokenization, part of speech, name entity recognition, syntactic parsing, worsens ambiguity, coreference, temporal resolution, semantic parsing, event relation. All these things have been built and they are part of the Jaguar system. So the Jaguar system takes text and attempts to build this ontology using those steps that I mentioned earlier. In case you do not have seeds, you can start this process by figure out which concepts are the most relevant concepts. So you have a set of documents that are related to a particular topic, some other documents that are just from the web, and then by comparing them, you rank some of those concepts and you figure out that for this particular topic, 1,000 concepts are most relevant, or 100, you have to put a threshold. But you can derive the most repeatable concepts, most important concepts, from comparing the topic concepts with the non-topic concepts. You can generate the seeds.
Where do you get the topics from? Sorry.
So let's say you want to build an ontology about telecommunication business, right? So you bring only those documents that relate to that topic, and these are just random text from the web or some other source. So Jaguar has these modules, the text processing, the classification, and the knowledge base maintenance. On the text processing, it does the input, process documents and seeds. And you extract concepts, you extract binary relations, these are semantic relations, use semantic parser to obtain contextual knowledge, and the output will be concepts, context, and relations. So you have here a sentence like the rebels have access to chemical weapons such as nerve gas and the other poisonous gas. Now, what's interesting here is that there is a universal knowledge, chemical weapons such as, this is always true, so nerve gas is a chemical weapon, but this is in the context of this sentence, which indicates that those people have these weapons. And also, by the way, and other poison gases, these are the same level as nerve gas, they all point to chemical weapons. But the fact that they have this, it's only indicated in that context, and probably this sentence comes from a broader context. Now, the next one is the classification. So what we do now is we try to classify one concept against some other concepts. And there are techniques in AI that do that. If you look at the paper in the description logic, you'll find many of these algorithms there. It checks assumption between two algorithms. So that's what is using. So classify each concept against every other concept and based on the properties that those concepts have. And add ESA and other binary relations to the hierarchy using some conflict resolution. I'll say more about that. And the output will be an organized or hierarchically organized knowledge base. And the last module in Jaguar is the maintenance of this. So what you want to do is you want to merge, because you can create an ontology from some set of documents about the same domain. Another ontology on the same domain from another set of documents, then you want to merge them. Then you want to visualize knowledge. Maybe you want to edit that knowledge base. So you have to have an interface to give you access to the knowledge that has been created by the system. See, it's much easier to edit the knowledge base than to create the knowledge base. So the system creates the raw knowledge base, and then the person just accepts or declines this relations and concepts, and if one decides that that concept really is not of interest in this domain, just kills it and destroys the links. Now, when should we have seeded or unseeded knowledge bases? If the domain, if the the documents are very much related to one domain, you can start without seeds, because you can identify seeds very easily. If you don't have documents that are very much related to a domain, to a topic, then you need to have seeds to jumpstart the creation of the knowledge base. This is an output of the Jaguar for building an ontology for bioweapons domains from a CNS collection. This is the collection that came from Monterey So the number of documents processed were 110, the number of seats used 155, the total number of sentences in those documents were 10,000 more. The sentences with seats are only 2,500 because those documents are about that particular domain. And the number of concepts extracted was close to 10,000, and the user relation generated were about 8,200. So you might want to know what happened, because there are fewer user relations than the concepts. But some concepts are not connected to anything, they're just hanging there. So you have to decide what to do with that. Now, we have the problem of merging. I think I'll just finish in a few minutes. The problem with merging. So you create two ontologies, and now you want to combine them. The approach to do that is to compare the concepts in a smaller ontology one at a time with the concepts in a bigger ontology, and you want to classify that concept against the bigger ontology. So here's an example. I'm rushing through this, but this is ontology L1, and this is L2, and I want to merge them. Let's look at this. Stock market is an exchange, is a workplace. Money market is a market, it's an industry. Stock market is a capital market, financial market. Money market is a financial market. Right? So you see here that this concept is the same as in this ontology, is the same here. Money market is here and it's here. Okay, so we are going to consolidate, use this as one concept, and then that is related to exchange, and there is no financial market. I'll show you the final result instead of going through all the steps. So this is the what results from merging. The money market goes to financial market, because the market now before was an ESA relation in L2 between money market and market. And this has to be removed because it's redundant. You can find out about this relation by knowing that there is another branch, ESA, so that doesn't have to be stored, so that will be removed. Right, so that's how you merge the
How did you, again, I don't see how you did that. I mean, how did, other than the fact that financial market happens to be a two-word thing in markets, a one-word thing, how do you know that none of the ones are reversed? Why couldn't the market be a financial market rather than?
So we had to inject a financial market in between money market and market. And you have to look at the definition of these concepts. Market has a certain definition, and financial market has a certain definition. And then you figure out that this is subsumed by market. So you break this by introducing that as an intermediary concept here. And to do that, you need to have the definition of the concepts. And they come from WordNet in this case. Now, if they are not in WordNet, then you have to look for some properties of this concept in order to do this classification. Okay. There is a lot to say about maintaining. The system gives you sometimes some relations that are anomalies and redundancies. They have to be corrected. So I think I'll just end here. One more thing, which I think it's rather interesting. How do we evaluate the ontologies that have been created by a system? Okay, there are no metrics from what I know. That have been proposed by others. So we have proposed this internally, this matrix. One is the precision, recall, conceptual expansion and unlinked concepts. So the precision is how many concepts are and relations extracted are relevant to the given domain. So one has to check manually, recall how many of the relevant content in the documents, document collection is being extracted. Conceptual expansion, what is the percentage of the new and relevant content in the ontology? All right. Some concepts are not relevant. You may extract concepts that are really not important for that domain. And then there are some concepts that are not linked to anything. And if you do not link them, they are totally useless. You have to find relations that link those concepts to some other concepts in ontology. So these are some of the matrix that we think that they can be used to judge the quality of the ontology being derived by the system. Okay. We have generated, of course, some more ontologies for different domains. And this seems to be a very, very much needed resource, because not having ontology is the bottleneck for not being able to do reasoning and other applications. So that's why I'm saying that this is a step towards constructing these ontologies automatically. So I think there is hope. That's the tone of my talk, that yes, I'm not so pessimist like others, but I think that some work in natural language, then we can have this ontology generated by machine. Are there questions?